This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is here. It's Matt Larkin. To my left, Ryan Kennedy. To my right, Ken Campbell and his va-va-voom, Coke can. And it's time for our trade deadline preview podcast. And I feel like before we dive into this, I need to give an immediate disclaimer that if you're listening to this in a couple days after we've recorded it, it's entirely possible some of these guys have been traded. So don't get upset. Just be happy that we were right for talking about these guys. But we apologize if any part of this podcast is dated. Hopefully not. And with that, let's launch into it. So first of all, guys, I think we should start kicking around a few of the biggest names that everybody's been talking about and just sort of speculate on what we think is going to happen, whether they're going to be traded, what we think would be the best destination. So I guess I'll volunteer the biggest name right off the bat. Let's just get down to business. Mark Stone. Next to Artemi Panarin, probably the most impactful guy anyone could get. Still entirely possible that the Senators re-sign him. It seems like he's always been far more likely than Matt Duchene to sign. And it seems like the Winnipeg Jets have been the suitor of choice that keeps being mentioned. Yeah. He's a Winnipeg boy. So I guess, first of all, do you guys think that Winnipeg is the best fit for Mark Stone? And do you think Stone is going to be traded?
Well, Ottawa just put together what they've called a very serious offer, I think, to Mark Stone. So he's got something to think about over the next little while. Speaking of this situation that you were just talking about, that might all be resolved. I hope it isn't. But over the next couple of days, he's going to have to think about what he wants to do and where he wants to go. I don't know why a guy would take it this far and not go the distance. I don't quite understand that, especially if you're Mark Stone, who's got great numbers and would garner all sorts of interest on July 1st. Like, if he wouldn't be the crown jewel of unrestricted free agency, he'd be very close to it. So I don't know why you wouldn't, in which case I don't know why the Senators wouldn't trade him. I was surprised. I mean, they played last night against Chicago and all three of those guys played. Stone, DeZingle, and Duchene all played, which I found rather curious. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna say that I think it's gonna be Stone is gonna stay and Duchene and DeZingle are gonna be the ones to go.
Yeah, that's kind of my read on the situation as well. And you bring up a good point about, you know, why would Stone go this far? But I almost wonder if, you know, you look at the possibilities of that contract and the fact that, you know, for the Senators, with the exception of like the Bobby Ryan deal, you have a lot of young talent on entry-level deals or close to it where, you know, Mark Stone can look at that landscape and say, we're not going to be good next year, maybe not the year after that, but maybe a couple of years out, sure, we could be pretty potent. And right now, I can fetch that big money contract. That their $10.5 million was what was put out there over obviously multiple years. You know, for a guy that was far from a sure thing to be an NHLer, you know, when he was a teenager, to get to this point, I think he's looking at a really nice payday. And, you know, I mean, he can leverage that in Ottawa because there have been so many missteps at the upper management level when it comes to player relations that I think Mark Stone has an opportunity to grow with this team, but also do right by himself.
Right. And he'll be the captain. He'll be the captain.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. And I agree. Yeah. Duchene, man, when they trade him, unless they get a really good return, that one's going to sting. When you think about what they gave up to get him in the first place, that's going to look real nasty.
It would show evolution from Pierre Dorion, though, if he's willing to put aside his pride and make the deal, even though it's going to highlight, you know, people are going to start doing the math. Well, let's see, what did you trade to get him?
Yeah.
But I think it's worse than, you know, losing him maybe for nothing or who knows, right? And I think I'm with you, Ken, that Stone, to me, has always felt like a guy who's going to stay, and he's repeatedly expressed how much he loved Ottawa. And I know this is just entirely, like, superstitious, but when I talked to Duchene in January and asked him about the trade. Like, I read his eyes, and, I felt like I could just feel it that he didn't think he was going to be there.
Right.
In the long run. You know, that's great analysis right there. And that's hard hitting stuff.
Yeah. Blink twice if Eugene Melnyk's behind me.
You know what though? Too, I think though that you know, I mean, it almost behooves Ottawa to get Stone back under contract because, in a strange way, because then Mark Stone's not out there, then the market becomes that much tighter, you know? Like, I think one of the problems with this market right now is it's a seller's market. Mm-hmm. It's a buyer's market.
It's a buyer's market.
I'm sorry, yeah. Because there's so many good players that are purported to be out there right now.
Yeah.
So you take one of those guys out of the mix, maybe Matt Duchene and Ryan Dzingel become that much more valuable because Mark Stone.
Yeah.
So you've got Mark Stone back. You've got that cornerstone back in your lineup.
I see what you did.
And then suddenly Matt Duchene and Ryan Dzingel are worth a little bit more because the market's tightened up a little bit.
Fair. Yeah. And we may as well just keep the Senators train going and talk about the other big name of the ball. Ryan Dzingel. No, just kidding. It's Matt Duchene. No disrespect to Ryan Dzingel. Duchene has always felt like the guy who's more likely to go. I think partially because Stone, it's almost like a guy that he makes more sense as a long-term fit for Ottawa because his game is the type of game that will age well. It's not based on speed. It's based on savvy and smarts and defense.
And angling.
If Duchene loses his speed when he gets older, then the contract, the next deal he signs might not look as good. So it does make sense for the Senators to trade him. The question is, where does he go? I would love to see – I know that it's funny. There's been so much talk of Stone going to Winnipeg, but to me, I would love to see Winnipeg replicate the trade they made for Paul Stastny last year because they're in win-now mode, and I think they could use an upgrade at the second-line center position, pushing Little down into the third-line role just like last year. Mm-hmm. It worked so well. Mm-hmm. And I just think it just feels like it's not Winnipeg's year per se, but – they're still in a strong window. They have so many big RFAs, you know, Lyon and Kyle Connor, to re-sign Jacob Trouba in the summer, and they can take a good shot this year. And they still have that deep prospect pool to trade from. Again and again, they could trade. I mean, they could easily spare a Christian Vesalainen type, someone like that.
Yeah.
And it's barely going to make a dent because their roster is so stacked at the NHL level. What do you guys think in terms of Duchene destinations?
I think Winnipeg makes sense. I think anywhere makes sense because everybody's looking for a good second line center. You know, we're going to get to this later, but I look at a team like St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tyler Bozak's our second line center right now.
Yeah.
David Perron's coming back. This team doesn't need anything other than depth down the middle. They've got everything other than that. You know, and you're talking about Duchene here. The only thing I wonder about Duchene is he going to become what until recently Ryan O'Reilly was a really good player who just happens to have losing follow him everywhere.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I look at Duchene and I look at Dzingel and like I'm thinking somebody's going to overpay for Dzingel.
Mm.
Either or both of at the trade deadline and in free agency. And part of the reason why Ryan Dzingel looks so good is he's been playing with Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
I think we're sort of all on the same page in that sense, and that Duchene will probably be the one to go. And if he goes to Winnipeg, I can see, you know, their first round pick and Vesalainen as the guys coming back.
Yeah.
Maybe they even have to throw in a Jack Roslovic? Do they have to?
That's the million-dollar question to me for Winnipeg if they're going to go for a Stone or Duchene. Do you have to sacrifice a roster player NHL prospect, or can you do it with a Dylan Sandberg instead?
Yeah,
but you can do it in Winnipeg because they're the second youngest team in the league.
That's wild.
Like Winnipeg is in such an enviable position. They're a Stanley Cup contender and they're the second youngest team in the league. So I talked about this in an upcoming feature. They're kind of on a dual prong thing where they got where they're trying to win and they're trying to develop too.
Yeah.
So I think they could, like, if it comes to the situation where, okay, we need this guy, we're going to overpay for him.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. We're going to overpay for him because everybody wants him. Okay, we're going to step up and we're going to be the ones that overpay for him. And then you say, okay, now we're set. Now we're set for a legitimate Stanley Cup run.
Yeah, and it sounds like Nick Petan is a player that Winnipeg would be willing to part with. you know, there's high expectations based on his junior career with Portland, and he's had some ups and downs at the pro level. But again, you know, if you're a team that's rebuilding and you look at, you know, what Nick Petan has offered in the past, then maybe say, okay, well, if he's part of a package, then you know, that's pretty nice. And you look at guys like Mason Appleton. I mean, the Jets are just so good at those mid to late round picks lately. They've done a fantastic job. You know, Sammy Nikku, I mean, maybe they don't want to part with him because he could be a really good blue liner at the NHL level within a year or two.
He would be a blue liner. He would be a regular on half the teams in the league.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So just,
you can't get in because
they got a great blue line.
Because Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
That'd be a nice gets for Ottawa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So you have to ask those questions if you're Winnipeg, where it's like, okay, well, if it gets us Matt Duchene and that gets us a Stanley Cup or close to it, then is that the price we have to pay? And
right.
I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff has exercised some pretty good judgment in his tenure in Winnipeg, and there's going to be some tough decisions.
But it's now. Like, it's now.
Oh, it's
right?
now.
It's now.
Yep.
Okay. So like, what Winnipeg's sitting there, the dilemma that Winnipeg has right now is they're sitting there going, we're going to be losing a guy who's going to go somewhere else and be a star.
Yeah.
You know? And we have to be at peace with that.
Yeah. Like Dallas have, with Jerome McGinley.
Right,
back in the
exactly. Yeah. We have to be okay with that. So we know that Christian Vesalainen or Jack Roslovic or whomever is going to be a stud at this level. But you know what? We are saying to our fan base, look, we haven't given you a ton to cheer about since you've been here. Last year was good. The year we made the playoffs and got swept in a great series against Anaheim, that was okay. But you know what? We've got our room here now. We got to go for it. And we fully knowing that very good chance Matt Duchene's going to play 18 games and the playoffs here and we'll never see his face again.
Right.
But you got to take that up. You got to take that chance sometimes.
That's right. Exactly.
That's why you do this. That's why you draft all these players.
Exactly.
That's why you stockpile your system.
Exactly. I think a lot of people forget that. The reason why you have the prospect depth is so that you can use it as an asset.
Yeah, it's an asset.
Right.
Yeah.
Another guy who's probably going to attract some similar depth in a trade or maybe a pick, maybe two picks, who knows. Wayne Simmonds has felt like one of the clear-cut rentals out there as opposed to the will they or won't they UFAs, you know, Panarin, et cetera. It seems like Simmonds getting dealt as a foregone conclusion. He's got that playoff-friendly game, especially when the refs put the whistles away, and he's very physical, net front presence, and I think can add a lot of just snarl to a team that needs it.
Right.
To me, Wayne Simmonds, I would like to see him. I don't know if I need to preface this. There's this myth that no one's willing to trade with their rival or in a division. That's not true. It happens. So if you're the Philadelphia Flyers, are you willing to send Wayne Simmonds to Pittsburgh?
Right.
Pittsburgh.
And especially because if the Flyers, I mean, the Flyers are hot. That's where it becomes a little bit complicated. But if they decide they're still going to treat themselves as unlikely to make the playoffs, then you think, oh, we're not going to have to face Wayne Simmonds in the playoff series anyways. Maybe he'll sign elsewhere later. But I think he's an appealing target for Pittsburgh because the Penguins, I think, what finally helped Washington get past them, both teams had speed, but Washington had the size as well. Mm-hmm. And Tampa Bay as well. If they can find a way to make it work, I think the Lightning are a team. I don't think they have any real weakness, but they couldn't get past Washington. And I think the tiebreaker, again, was size. So I would like to see Wayne Simmonds in a Lightning uniform or Penguins uniform. What about you guys?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, what would Pittsburgh give up, though? Like, what do they have?
Yeah.
This year's first round pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be enough to me to get Wayne Simmonds.
Oh, that should be enough.
Yeah.
He hasn't been...
He's not killing
great.
It.
No. He hasn't been great this year.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Philly. They're winning, but is Wayne Simmonds really...
Like, he's not the driver, so that's what does makes this interesting.
He's not driving this winning streak, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what makes this... And I think that's what's going to drive his value down a little bit. Mm. I think he's a guy that at the beginning of the year, like he'd be one of the top guys on the board right now.
Yeah.
He's not anymore because he hasn't had a very good year. And then you look and you go, okay, lots of miles, plays a hard game, getting older. And then you go,
But as a rental.
As a rental, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're okay. And for me, I wonder how much of his role in Philly has been dictated by the arrival of James Van Riemsdyk, who has that similar net front presence. Totally different players in terms of physicality, but just in terms of tipping pucks and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the power play. Yeah.
I wonder if it's a Toronto or a Boston. You know, I mean, Boston, they love the hard-edged guys, and Simmonds would certainly bring a nice element to that lineup. And with Toronto, they don't have anybody like that. Mm-hmm. So if you had him...
And he's a Toronto kid.
And he's a Toronto guy.
Which would he'd be juiced up to be here. Totally. He's totally psyched to be here.
I hear Don Cherry's voice already right now. Toronto boy, Scarborough boy.
I remember watching him play. But I mean, if you think about Toronto, if they could make it work in terms of, you know, assets and things like that. I mean, it's a short-term rental. You're fine with it. But it gives you... Tom Wilson insurance, if it happens to come to that, and it doesn't have to be Tom Wilson, it could be somebody else, just against the Boston Bruins for that matter.
Yeah.
If you want to match toughness, Wayne Simmonds is there for you, and he gives them that net front presence that they really don't have. If you look at the Leafs power play, John Tavares is the guy in the front, and it's not that he's like throwing elbows and like digging in, it's just he's super smart and has amazing hand-eye coordination. Yeah. So he'd give them a different look for a power play that has really gone south in the second half with only a couple of nice little spurts here and there.
For sure. And I also wonder if the market is going to hold its breath on Wayne Simmonds until Michael Ferland is dealt with.
Yeah.
Because assuming the Hurricanes don't decide to keep him as an in-house rental and they want to trade him, it's almost like his skill set is a young Simmonds. It's like a younger model.
So
he'd probably cost a little bit more, but I wonder if teams are going
to pursue him. So then he becomes a plan B,
Yeah,
right?
He's a consolation prize if you don't get a Michael Ferland.
And I think I'm going to go on the record here as to saying that I think if Michael Ferland and or Wayne Simmonds get traded, they're both somebody's going to overpay for both of them.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too. It's that type of skill set people get excited about. But it's the I think people have visions of you know like the Rick Tocchet trade when the Penguins got him, like the guy that brings the extra grit and heart and soul. So now let's talk about arguably the biggest name of all, unless it's Mark Stone, but Artemi Panarin and the Blue Jackets. As of the recording time of this podcast, are I believe 1 point up or tied for the last playoff spot in the East. They're hanging by a thread. Morale is low.
They're sucking.
Probably because they're very distracted. So do you still consider the idea of Panarin as an in-house rental? Because what if you do that and you miss the playoffs? And if you make the playoffs, right now, is Columbus just going to make the playoffs to end up cannon fodder to face Tampa?
If
they drop, if they're in that wild card spot, then is it worth keeping Panarin? I feel like suddenly I've been sort of in the keep Panarin camp, but I'm wondering if it's starting to shift. And now it's like, well, can you risk that?
How can you keep both Panarin and Bobrovsky and then either not make the playoffs or get smoked in the first round?
Yeah.
Like that would be a disaster. And that is where this looks to be going right now. I think you've got to cash in that chip. The Panarin chip is the one to cash. I mean, as checkered as Bobrovsky's playoff history has been, and it has been very checkered, and as kind of suboptimal as he's played this year, I still think he's the guy that would stay. I think there's just too much there, you know. But I think Panarin is a guy you could move and get a very, very good package for.
Yeah, and I think Elliot Friedman mentioned Dallas in his column, and as soon as I saw that, I thought to myself, Denis Gurianov is a player that hasn't been able to find himself in the Stars lineup. He's been shuttled down to Texas, but he's got a lot of upside still. And I wonder if Columbus facing down this possibility of losing these guys for nothing or a discounted return, if you can go to a team like the Stars, who obviously are not the top dogs in the West by any stretch of the imagination, maybe you can get a really nice package with some high end elements like a Gurianov. And say to yourself, look, Panarin wouldn't play ball. We did what we could. At least we're going to get a decent return. And whether or not we make the playoffs, we're just going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And Dallas is interesting to me because they clearly need that forward depth. I don't know if they can get enough to get over the top, but with Jim Neal, it's hard to say because I think everyone loves Jim Neal. He's one of the nicest GMs they'll ever talk to. But I think it's pretty clear he's getting very low on leash. And I think fewer GMs are under more pressure to make something happen. And as far as I know, he has the green light still to get aggressive. So that would be an interesting kind of go-for-broke trade for that team. What about, Kenny, I know you were talking to me about this guy earlier today before the podcast, Mr. Chris Kreider in Manhattan.
Yeah, a year left on his contract at four and change, I think.
Yeah, 4.6, I believe.
So a really, really, like a very favorable situation and a guy that I think would really be, if he were put out there to be, you know, there'd be some real interest for that reason. You know, he's playing a lot better like that. He's playing with Zibanejad and Zuccarello on that top line, and they've been lights out lately. They've been very, very good. And I just think, you know, I mean, he's 27, he's got a year left on his deal. You could keep him, but then you've got to re-sign him. And then, you know, where is he going after that? Has he played his best hockey? He's kind of playing really well right now. I think you sort of sell high on this guy and you move him and you get, you know, that package of prospect, pick, player.
Yeah, that one's a tough one for me because he's kind of right in the middle where if you're the player, you look at the Rangers and you say, okay, well, we're not going to be a Stanley Cup team for a couple of years. But again, just like Stone in Ottawa, you look at what New York is building and it's like, man, they got some nice players. You know, a lot of high-end picks coming up in the draft. If Tampa wins the Cup, it gets even better. You know, a second-rounder turns into a first. And you're not that old. It's a really tough situation because, you know, being as athletic as he is.
Yeah, and fast.
Yeah, I wonder, like, could he be a leader on that team as they transition? I don't envy the position of anybody involved because I don't think there is a right answer in that scenario.
Yeah, it's tough. I've been saying for a while, I feel like Chris Kreider is a test for Jeff Gordon because to me it's tempting to keep him playing the best hockey of his career, but at the same time, the price, to me, he's a Simmons or Ferland rental, but on steroids. He's not a rental, but he's got that power forward game, but also with more skill, I believe, than either of those guys. And to me, the Rangers, it's like if they're really doing a scorched earth rebuild, by the time they get good again, Kreider might be nearing the end of his prime. And at that point, he'll be signed to a long, long-term deal, maybe $6-7 million a year.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Rangers are better off trading Kreider this year for two playoff runs.
Right, exactly.
And getting the moon for him.
That's the key.
Nice
return. And to me, that's the key right there. Is if you're trading for Chris Kreider at this deadline, you have him for two playoff runs.
Yeah. Exactly.
You don't just have him for one. You have him for two. And, I mean, quite fine. I mean, you also have him so that you can start negotiating with him on July 1st for an extension, right?
Exactly.
So, I think if – yeah, I mean, it's a vexing situation. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I think what the Rangers have to decide is what's our future with Chris Kreider?
Yeah.
And if we do see a long-term future and the scenario that you mapped out, Ryan, then yes, I do see a situation where he stays. But if they've decided, look, you know, we're not going to be good enough for the next couple of years, and by the time we're good enough, he's probably going to be into his declining years, then you deal him now because a team is going to pay a lot more for Chris Kreider knowing they have him for two playoff runs rather than just one.
Another name that Ken, you volunteered for our little trade list today, an interesting name because he's a big time prospect, or at least a year ago he was seen in that light. It's changed a little bit. Ilya Tolvanen, Nashville Predators, their top prospect at forward, a guy who, Ryan, you would sort of foreshadowed that it was going to be a tough transition for him to the North American game. It has been, but we know there's a lot of upside there.
Mm-hmm.
Smashed Kuznetsov's records in the KHL, was great at the Olympics, et cetera, et cetera. So what are you thinking, Kenny? What's your reasoning for wanting him on our little trade list today?
Well, because I think that because he's going to be the guy that goes back for one of these big names.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So a Duchene, a Panarin, you know, one of those guys. You know, if I'm Columbus and I'm dealing with Nashville for Artemi Panarin, then it's like, yeah, okay, this I'm not settling for less than this guy. If I'm Ottawa and I'm talking to Nashville about my guys, it's like, yeah, this is the guy we want. It's almost like having another first round pick this year, right? You know,
yep.
I mean, you're sort of starting with that. So that's why he, to me, is an interesting guy because I think he's going to be one of those guys that anybody Nashville talks to about getting one of these big ticket guys, it's going to be, okay, so the discussion starts with Tolvanen.
Right.
It starts with Tolvanen and it goes from there. It doesn't, and with Tolvanen, it starts with him.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at his first season in North America, four games with the Preds. Most of it has been spent in the AHL with Milwaukee. 19 points in 37 games, which is like decent. It's not like blowing the doors off.
No.
I thought at the World Juniors, he really only got good when he went on that line with Kaapo Kakko and Anton Lundell. I thought they really brought something out in him. And ironically, he was a playmaker, not a finisher.
Right.
Usually
right.
He's the guy with the awesome release. Mm-hmm. He's the guy
like
with the Brett Hull shot.
Waiting and waiting in that tournament. Like,
yeah.
When's this guy going to start showing something?
Yeah.
Like, waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, and he made the crucial play against Canada in the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
But you're right. It took a while. And I think the upside is still there because of the shot. But it's an interesting situation because if a team's acquiring him, they might just send him to their AHL affiliate, or you know they'll probably give him a tryout. I mean, if you're a rebuilding team, you might be like,
can,
"Hey,
he
let's see what you
yeah,
got."
Yeah, sure. See what you can do for the last 20 games.
Yeah, but is he going to be a top six guy right away next year? I don't know if you can say that unequivocally right now.
No.
I think there's still a ton of potential there, and he's learning the game. He's learning to play more of an all-around game, but that's the challenge. That's the risk in acquiring him is, can he be that sniper that gets you 30 in the NHL?
Right.
So, will he be that guy?
So, and this will also be the gut check for David Poile too, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like it's like, okay, so does he just say, I want your guy, but you can't touch this guy? You can't touch Tolvanen?
Mm.
Or does Tolvanen become what Philip Forsberg was for him?
Ooh,
way
right.
back, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right.
The guy that you deal away for a guy that doesn't do much
but just,
for you.
Just
then,
not for Martin Hirsch.
Yeah.
Maybe for Chris Kreider.
Yeah, am I right? Am I right?
But it's funny. I've said this about Nashville for the last few weeks that I think more so than the Jets, I think the Nashville Predators should be behaving with urgency because they have to realize the Jets ain't going nowhere. The Jets are going to be dominant for years to come.
Yeah.
Right?
And Nashville, it's not like Nashville's an old team per se, but I think their core is at least in prime years. And they have some pieces that are getting old, like Pekka is into his mid-30s. And that decor, they're creeping up toward the late 20s. So
yeah.
I feel like this team's in a win-now window.
They're playing like they're bored right
yeah,
now.
Man, I
like
think
they're playing like, oh, God. Man, when's this season going
to
end?
Because
right.
I think they
you
just because they're anxious to and get another shot, right? Having won the President's Trophy last year. So to me, even though Tolvanen would be a big sacrifice, like if I'm David Poile, I'm going for Mark Stone. I'm going for Panarin, the biggest fish possible, dangling, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Even though it could be a rental.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Maybe you can re-sign whoever you get. We'll see. Going back to the Rangers, Ryan, Kevin Hayes is a guy that was on your list. And he's more – to me, it's less complicated than Chris Kreider because Hayes, even though there's talk of maybe re-signing him, he's a pending UFA. If you get to the deadline, you want to cash in that chip.
Exactly.
So what are you thinking, Ryan, in terms of where you see him going?
Well, I mean, this one, it felt telegraphed as soon as he re-signed that one-year contract at the beginning of the season. It was like, yeah, we're going to see other people, which is fine.
We're
again,
gonna have an open relationship.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because, again, you have a player in his late 20s, great size, gives you some versatility in the lineup. I look at Kevin Hayes right now as the type of guy that, you know, if Winnipeg doesn't hit on their top guy, Kevin Hayes is a very nice fallback.
Uh-huh.
You know, because of the freedom he gives you with being a UFA, if it doesn't work out, you know, everybody goes on their merry way and that's fine. I wonder about Columbus too.
Hmm.
You know, you think about them down the middle. I wonder if that's the type of player where, again, you know, the Blue Jackets, so much is in flux there. But if they wanted to be like a buyer and a seller, you know, Kevin Hayes is the type of player that obviously would, you know, help out in the short term. And again, it's a test run. Maybe he's the type of guy that they want to see in their lineup. I mean, the Blue Jackets are a pretty big team. I think Kevin Hayes has a lot to offer, and he's not going to be the type of player that's going to cost you a huge package. It's going to be kind of a mid-size return.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay.
I you know, and again, I'm kind of going to screw up Reg Lansbury's question here about the Blues, but I see the Blues as a good fit too.
Oh, for sure,
Like a 2C for them, a guy who pushes Bozak down to the third.
Look at Kim DeLingo, 2C.
Sundquist down to the fourth. And yeah, so I see that as a really good fit. And again, as you say, Ryan, it wouldn't be, you know, you're not paying a king's ransom for this guy. This is typical Kevin Hayes for a second round pick. Right?
Yeah.
Right? I think maybe a mid-level prospect.
He's had a good year. He's got speed and size. Yeah. I think Kevin Hayes might cost a first. Personally.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would pay more for Kevin Hayes than Wayne Simmonds, for example.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I wonder if Boston might be a good spot for Kevin Hayes. I remember hearing that before, reports out of Boston that he was on their list. But that's a team I think that's been hurting for forward depth for almost years, really, because they've been there's always those accusations of being a top-heavy team. And even though I think Boston needs help on the wings more than at center, in today's day and age, it's like if you just add talent to your top nine, wherever the talent goes, it adds that depth.
Yeah.
To your forward.
You can figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. What about Dougie Hamilton in Carolina? Someone who we've talked about him on this podcast before, Mr. Museum, et cetera, et cetera.
Museum.
And Carolina is interesting because they make so much sense for a trade, whether it's at the deadline or the draft, because they have that surplus, especially on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's Hamilton or Justin Falk or Brett Pesce, it seems like there's a decent chance that one of those guys gets involved. But with all of them still under contract with term left, it doesn't have to happen at the deadline. Still, if you're the team buying, you might want to just go get a Dougie Hamilton. So do you think a Dougie Hamilton deal could happen?
I certainly think it could. And again, this is not a case of Carolina wanting to get rid of Dougie Hamilton. He's been a very effective player for them. But as you said, they have that surplus of right-handed D, which I feel like we need to do a deep dive on, like, why there aren't that many right-handed D in the world.
Yeah.
Like, it's always a thing.
Yeah, it's the biggest, it's the most sought-after commodity in hockey.
You'd think, like, 10 years ago, parents would have been like, you're shooting right, Johnny.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, but I don't like it. Yeah, I don't care.
Too bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I did the math a couple of years ago for something, and it was like 64% left, 36 right. Like, I assume it hasn't changed that much.
Yeah.
So whatever reason it is, Carolina has a surplus. And, this is the type of guy that I think you can make a real hockey trade with at the deadline.
Yeah.
Carolina is surging, no pun intended. And, they want to be in the mix. It's been a long time since they've made the playoffs. So I think if they saw a deal where they could strengthen themselves elsewhere and spare Hamilton, then I think they do it.
Yeah, I think that's one where you don't want just futures.
No, you need
presence. You don't want just futures. You want something. You want something that makes you better now.
Yes.
So, like, do you package like a Dougie Hamilton and Michael Ferland for something that makes you, for something really big and
strong? William Nylander. Dun dun dun.
Well, there's a question coming later from.
Whoa! Oh my God! My head just exploded.
Okay, that's a good one.
I think it's a good trade.
Yeah, yeah. And I do think in this case, the Leafs for the team I would mention is the best fit for Dougie Hamilton. He's exactly what they're looking for.
He's exactly what they're
looking for. And they could have had him, and they didn't get him. They could have had him with that pick a long time ago.
But I think. The only thing is, you probably do have to sacrifice a Kasperi Kapanen or Andreas Janssen or, I don't know, well, William Nylander, theoretically, yes. I don't know whether that's something that Kyle Dubas is willing to do now. We're going to get to that later.
Well, they'd have to make the money work.
Yeah.
They'd have to make the money work. Although, it wouldn't be a matter of sacrificing because you don't want them or you want them. It's a matter of making
the money work next year.
Yeah.
This year, they're fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's fair, though. Okay. Last on our trade board, Jacob Silverberg, Mr. Playoff. Not Mr. Regular Season ever, but he's been consistently good in the
West Coast Jay Guentzel.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Silverberg's points per game usually skyrocket in the playoffs. The question is, do you think
that's not going to happen this year?
Well, but is he going to be rental?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Bob Berry has expressed interest in re-signing him. If I'm Bob Berry, though,
they're a budget team too. Yeah. Like, I don't know that they can do it. I don't know if they can afford him.
Well, and you look at Anaheim's situation, and again, this is a team where if you look at Silverberg in his late 20s, I mean, if he's looking at the landscape in Anaheim, I don't think there's a lot of hope there in the short term. They still have all those old guys on contracts.
Yeah.
And I mean, they have some decent youth coming up. Yeah. And I mean, hypothetically, they could win the Jack Hughes sweepstakes. So that would certainly help.
That would help a lot.
But if I'm Silverberg, I look at the situation and say, I want to be winning. And I'm a good player. He's got a great two-way game.
Yeah.
As you said, Matt, he can bring that offense in the postseason. And you know, there should be a lot of buyers in Anaheim. They got to listen to those deals.
Well, again, if you're Anaheim, so you're going to sign another older guy to a long-term deal?
Yeah.
Just to hang on to him and keep him?
Yeah.
Like, that's not working right now, guys. Not working.
And he's just he kind of hums along 20-goal, 40-point kind of pace regular season typically.
You're not a playoff team and you're not going to be one for a while, doesn't help if he's only good in the playoffs.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think you want to pay for the playoff production. Exactly, yeah. To me, I think one of the lower-end shopping teams, like Dallas might be a team that could – if they're not going to – if they don't have the assets to chase the big fish, even though, like we said, we'd love to see Panarin be a cool fit for Dallas' sake. But I don't think Dallas is like swimming in assets compared to what a team like the Jets can offer people.
Right. Right.
So that looks like the type of team to me that could go for a Silverberg, just sort of a depth addition if you're looking for more scoring on the wings. We're going to get to some reader questions now, and we're going to start off with maybe our most dedicated reader, my dad. And I know this is nepotism, but he asks questions often, and I don't let many of them slip through. But I feel like a lot of people have asked questions about William Nylander anyways, so he's going to represent the group.
Okay, so like when you go for dinner at your dad's mom's place, like you walk in the door and he just starts firing questions at you, and it doesn't annoy the hell out of
you? No, that's more father-in-law. My dad is more of a New Age fan. Like, my dad would bring up Corsi and stuff. But my father-in-law would be like, the Leafs got to get Roman Polak back.
No.
Yes. And then I'll have to explain to my father-in-law, like, why Jake Gardner is better than Nikita Zaitsev. Right? So I'd say my father-in-law.
Okay.
Cool story, bro. Yeah. So anyways, hi, Dad. My dad asks, should the Leafs consider trading William Nylander for another D, possibly freeing up cap room to sign Marner, Kapanen, and Andreas Janssen? It's a very interesting question. To me, if it comes into play, Dad, it would be in the summer because Kyle Dubas has made his promise, and it doesn't mean that his word is stronger than oak and he's never going to break this promise to not trade Nylander, but I think he's going to have to at least give that core one playoff together. So I don't think a Nylander trade would ever happen this year unless the Leafs bomb out in round one, get crushed by Boston.
Which they will.
Then you reevaluate.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree?
I agree. First thing I want to say, though, is that obviously, the apple did not fall far from the tree in terms of spelling. He misspelled both Kapanen and Janssen.
Dad!
And you've inherited that.
So. No, my dad's a professional writer, though, so he is. What a family love fest. My dad does this. My dad does this.
My dad could be like your dad. I think this is one that you do after this playoff. And I said it in our first podcast after they signed John Tavares, and I'm maintaining it. The Leafs are going to suffer a gut punch in round one of the playoffs this year, and then they're going to have to decide what they want to be and how they want to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a perfect example of that.
Have they not had two gut punches in a row?
No, but this is going to be a real gut punch.
I think last year
this one's going to be a real, you know, kick to the nuts.
Right,
like,
in the kidneys.
Yeah. Like, this one's going to really hurt.
Yeah. This one could be like a fan base starts to turn on you type of loss.
Yeah.
Wow.
If it happens.
Yeah. Well, I would just reiterate, my Dougie Hamilton theory on that one. If you can get Dougie for a Nylander, maybe you do that. To shore up your decor, become even more mobile and two-way on the back end, and then maybe make a run. Who knows?
And you save some money on that cap-wise as well, right?
Yeah.
Next question is from Pete Fuertes. Sorry, I'm just practicing my pronunciation.
It's actually Fuertes.
What are you talking about? Pete Fuertes. Jeez. Who stays and goes for the LA Kings at the deadline? Who will be dealt on draft day? And is Artemi Panarin really a legitimate candidate to join the crown? Lots going on here, Pete.
And he said, thank you, mark.
I think maybe we'll put the draft day talk aside because we're focusing on the trade deadline. And I think if Panarin is going to join the crown, it'll be as a free agent. Not as deadline trade. So let's knock down that pick as well.
Yeah.
And what we have left is the question of who stays and who goes for the Kings at the deadline. Jake Muzzin's already gone. Does Alec Martinez become the next casualty? Same contract as Muzzin, couple years left, $4 million.
Yeah,
I feel like any team would want Muzzin as like that depth rental because of his experience.
You mean Martinez or Muzzin?
Oh, did I say Muzzin?
You said
Martinez.
Yeah,
Martinez.
Yeah. Scored a Stanley Cup winning goal, too.
He did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I but those are all reasons to keep him too, don't you think?
I don't know, but I think if it's like he's at his peak or already past it. If you're the, I think the Kings are so far away from.
Yeah,
I think the Kings would.
They might be the furthest away.
Desperately love to get rid of Jeff Carter.
Yes, yeah.
And they're gonna have to take in the shorts when they do that too.
50%
Yeah, they're gonna have to take salary, and they're not getting. Like, what you get back for Jeff Carter is
not Jeff Carter.
Not having to pay Jeff Carter.
Yeah. I'm wondering, too.
They're in hell.
Yeah.
The Kings are in hell. They're in hell.
But they got their rings, so it's okay.
Yeah.
It was all worth it.
I mean, their deal with the devil.
Yeah. That's exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah. And for me, I wonder if Ilya Kovalchuk moves. If you can find the proper market, maybe the Islanders, where Lou Lamoriello is the GM.
Yeah.
I'd be intrigued by that because obviously things have not worked out there.
Do you want Ilya Kovalchuk at this stage?
Boston might. They've been so desperate going on the wings. But again, it's
two
same
more
as
years.
You got and you can only retain salary on two players at a time for your franchise, right? So
right.
I don't remember if the Kings. I don't think they're retaining salary on anybody else.
No.
But if you dealt Carter and Kovalchuk, you'd probably have to fill up your salary retention board, which kind of hamstrings you for later.
Yeah, and I'll say, I see what you're saying about having him for another 2 years, but I mean, hypothetically, you can trade him again later. So it might only be a year and a half more.
Maybe. Okay. Fair enough. Next question is from Reg Lansbury. And Reg says, if the Blues decide to be buyers, even with this 10-game winning streak, what could they use the most to make a serious playoff run? And you hit the nail on the head earlier, Ken. That depth at center, for sure.
Number two C. That's what they need. Mm. Absolutely. They don't need anything else. Maybe you could say they need some depth in goal. Because Jake Allen just doesn't seem to be.
Jordan Binnington right now.
They haven't given up a goal. Like they play, you're going to be hearing this after they play Toronto on Tuesday, but they haven't given up a goal in three games.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure they haven't given up a goal in three games. And so they are set everywhere except for depth at center. So I think that's what they would be looking for.
I think depth at center, and really, I think just a high end forward. Even if it turned out to be a Panarin or something.
They're getting
like that.
They're getting one in David Perron.
Yeah, I guess right now he's providing that.
Yeah,
them,
well,
yeah.
He's coming back. Right?
Tarasenko's back from the dead.
Yeah.
Anyway, Perron comes back as well for sure.
Yeah.
But I still think the Blues as a whole, they're a team that could use another like star powered scorer.
Right.
Right. So I think that would be the fit. So whether it's a Duchesne or whether it was a Panarin, someone like that. Do you think the same, Ryan? Would you say?
Yeah, the goaltending thing's vexing as well. I agree about the center, but I mean, right now you're riding Jordan Binnington, which is awesome. It's a great story. But if you're serious about a run, do you try to upgrade on the fly? And it's tough because you don't want to turn to your team and be like, yeah, this is probably a mirage with Jordan Binnington. You want to have confidence in the kid. But if you're serious and you look at, the West is not wide open. Winnipeg and Nashville are at the top. You got Calgary there, although I've mentioned their goaltending many times on this podcast. But
which has been good lately.
No. Well, Mike's up on Mike Smith.
Yeah, Mike Smith. I'm going to throw a name out. Anders Nilsson. In Ottawa.
As for a backup?
Yeah, even for a number three.
Yeah.
Just as insurance.
Yeah, I think that'd be smart.
He's a guy that, last week, I think he stopped like 99 of 100 shots in two games. Like, he was lights out. So maybe there's a guy that you get for literally next to nothing.
Yeah.
Right? And he's just a guy that you kind of squirrel away. And if you get into trouble, you go, okay, well, here we go. Here we are. Let's see what you can do kind of thing. Right?
You're tall.
Yeah. You're big.
What can you do for us?
With Binnington, it's weird. Of course, he's not going to stay this hot. But the thing with Binnington, it's not like he was a D-grade prospect. He was a B-grade prospect. He wasn't elite, but he was – like the fact that we've all known who Jordan Binnington is for 5-6 years, like we knew who he was coming up, right? Like he's not – he wasn't – the Blues had a lot of depth at goaltending depth coming out of their system for a long time when they had, Ben Bishop back in the day and they still had Husso and lots of different guys. Jake Allen, of course. But He kind of got lost in the shuffle, but he was always a pretty decent prospect. So I'm not that – I don't think it's incomprehensible that he's going
to
emerge as a legitimate NHL
star. No, because it takes goalies that amount of time anyways. And now it's almost like when you draft a goalie, it's like, yeah, when he gets good, he'll be playing for somebody else probably.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it takes –
like pitchers
usually it takes 5 years and two or three organizations for them to – you know, not the top end ones, but kind of the guys that find their way. You know?
The non-Carter Hearts.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's like
yeah.
pitching prospects in baseball. Prospects are basically used as trading tools.
Yeah.
Right? Like
yeah.
they're included in blockbuster yeah. trades for stars. Last question, Christina Woods for the win. Christina busts out. Technically, this question is about a trade, and it involves hockey, so we're going to allow it.
Yeah.
And Christina asks, why did I trade my Bobby Orr rookie card for a bicycle? Poor Christina.
No, not poor Christina.
Was it a 10
way
speed?
To go, Christina? You did it because that's what kids do. Because that's what kids do. Christina got a bicycle.
Yeah.
Okay, she got a bicycle. She probably got years of use out of this bicycle. She enjoyed the bicycle. She had great childhood memories because of this bicycle that she traded for a Bobby or a rookie card. Good on you, Christine. That's what kids do. That's what kids should do. If everybody had kept their Bobby or rookie cards, they wouldn't be worth anything.
I'm going to go against Christina on this one.
Not a chance.
Where's your sense of whimsy, Christina? You should be thinking of that card as priceless. It's a magic item. If you're a kid, if you have something you love, it doesn't matter what you get offered for it. You keep it because you love it.
Maybe she was a Canadiens fan and she hated Bobby Orr.
I don't know. If it was me, I would have been like, no, it's far too valuable. I'm not going to trade it.
You would have said it in that voice, too.
That was my voice. Right. My voice is as high as a dog whistle.
Well, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, trading hockey cards, and at one point there was the Eric Lindros Upper Deck card where they had to Photoshop his head onto somebody else's body because he hadn't actually played yet.
Yeah.
And like other kids were like, haha, that card's gonna be worth so much because they weren't supposed to make it and blah blah blah. It's like I ended up seeing that card a million times later. It was not a rare card.
You know what they used to do when I was a kid? Like you guys don't. We had it was OPG and that was it. That was the
nice.
Only card you got, and they would just go stamp on it, traded to whatever,
right?
In his old uniform, and there was one guy. He looked like Mr. Potato Head in his card because they clearly like just stuck his head on somebody else's body. I can't remember who it was, but yeah, I remember doing that when I was a kid all the time. But like to me, it's like man, that's because that's part of being a kid, trading a Bobby Orr card for a bicycle. Like so what? You'd have what? $800 What did you get? What would you get for a Bobby Orr rookie card now? I don't know, $1,000
Yeah, nobody collects cards
anymore. She could have bought a lot of bikes.
She got
a lot of bikes for her
kids.
She could have bought bikes for her kids.
She probably rode that bike all over the place and experienced all kinds of great things because of that bike. I'm with you, Christine. Good for you. Good on you.
There you go.
That bike is your Martin Irak, Christina. I'm gonna end on that mic drop. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the trade deadline. And apologies again if and when the material in this podcast becomes very dated. Bye-bye.